Hello and welcome to the inaugural episode of The Bilbao Effect, a new podcast series from FDI Intelligence looking at whether culture can boost economic development. I'm Seth O'Farrell, FDI's global investment reporter, and where better to begin our journey but in the Basque Country in northern Spain, where the Guggenheim Group drafted in a new member to its museum family in 1997, the Guggenheim Bilbao. But this wasn't just any museum, this was a work of art itself, a piece of awe-inspiring architecture by acclaimed architect Frank Gehry, whose titanium exterior glimmers and sways on Bilbao's waterfront. The city has become something of a poster child for how a swanky urban makeover combined with some contemporary art can give a boost to a fading industrial town. Until the late 1990s, Bilbao was a city of steelworks and shipyards, haunted by years of separatist violence. Now it enjoys the status of a popular European city break, COVID-19 notwithstanding, with the museum boasting roughly 1 million visitors a year, pre-pandemic. With me to discuss the extraordinary transformation of Bilbao and its effects is Juan Ignacio Bidarte, the Director General of Guggenheim Bilbao, who oversaw the construction of the museum in the late 1990s. A very warm welcome to you, Juan Ignacio. Bienvenido.
Thank you very much. Pleasure to be here.
I thought I'd start by asking, just firstly, let's go back to the mid-1990s. Can you tell us a bit about how the decision came about on the part of the city of Bilbao to change itself in this way?
Yes, well, this project really came in Bilbao, or happened in Bilbao, as part of a much broader transformation plan that the city was already had about just started. If we go back to 1991, which is the year where this project really started, Bilbao was in a fairly dire situation. Many of its traditional economic engines were in decline, linked to industry, mostly to heavy industry. But the city was also in a particularly interesting moment because Spain as a country had joined the European Union just 5 years before. So there was the sense that the geopolitical and the economic situation of the city was also changing, because Bilbao was not just being at the northern front of Spain, but it was very close to the border with Europe and with France. So it was certainly part of that, what at that time was called the southwestern facade of Europe. So the city took the was facing this economic decline, but thought that some changes needed to be implemented. And as part of that broad strategy, one of the issues which the city focused on was the importance of culture and how culture for a city that wanted to play a role in the European scene, culture was an important factor. So there was this idea of strengthening the cultural sector, which traditionally had importance in the city, so strengthening existing institutions, but also with the idea of that the city would welcome the possibility of hosting an institution which would speak not just to the local audience, but to the international audience too. So this is how the possibility of this exchange with the Guggenheim Foundation started to happen in 1991.
Mm-hmm. And the Guggenheim Museum Bilbao was awarded many prizes in the 1990s through to the 2000s, Gold Medal in Fine Arts in 1999, the European Museum Forum Museum of the Year Award in 2000. What was the reaction when it all kicked off, as it were, in the early 2000s in the city and the cities on a broader stage?
Well, when the museum opened, the reaction was quite enthusiastic. I think the project was more controversial when the project really started, before it became a reality, because as I mentioned, the city was on the midst of an important crisis, not just economic but also an identity crisis. So the idea of spending resources on a project which was using somehow culture as a tool for transformation was not commonly accepted. But when the museum opened in 1997, and it became really a magnet for visitors, not just for local, but also for, most importantly, for international visitors. The museum was really meant to be a catalyst of this process, of this change, because the idea behind it was that the museum, in addition of becoming a cultural institution of international appeal, was also meant to be an agent of economic development and a driver of urban renewal in the area, which the, at the time when the museum was built was a marginal space in the city, but which with time was transformed into an opportunity space for the future of the city. So the museum helped that the city, the citizens of Bilbao, recover confidence which was very necessary to confront the challenge of change, because what was clear in 1991, 1992, when the museum started, the construction started, was that the city needed to change if it was if it would have any chance of trying to achieve the goals of becoming, let's say, a mid-sized European city, which would have an international appeal.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned also before that there were other changes that were afoot already, a new metro line as well, I believe. Is it an oversimplification to say that the Guggenheim, the museum, ushered in this change? Is that the myth of the Bilbao effect, or is that the reality? Did the Guggenheim Bilbao actually itself usher in this incredible transformation of the city?
Well, I think the reality, it's nuanced. I think to say that the museum was the icing in the cake is certainly to misinterpret what really happened, because the museum had a central role in what was happening in the city. But it is also true that the museum by itself wouldn't have been able to achieve all the goals. So it was essential for the museum to be successful, to be part of this broader transformation strategy you were mentioning, that had many fronts. And the first front of that, which was really the first that started, was a very thorough process of cleaning an environmentally polluted river that is in Bilbao and that connects Bilbao to the sea. And of course, the heavy investment in public transportation infrastructure, with the subway system, with the improvement of the airport, with the enlargement of the port. So there were many other areas which the of that plan, which were essential to make the goal of the transforming the city a reality. But the museum played a major role in that. We see the museum as a catalyst of the process. So it's not it was by far not the most important investment in economic terms, in quantitative terms, but it did. It was really the factor that made the rest of the plan happen in a good way. So, answering your question, it's not the icing, but it wouldn't have been. But the change would not have been possible if the museum would have been developed in isolation.
Mm-hmm. Because the museum, where it actually sits in Bilbao on the waterfront, you know, was a sort of disaffected, polluted area, as you said. So that itself, it galvanized a sort of local transformation there, you're saying, in terms of infrastructure and not just in terms of culture, that is.
Yes. I mean, the cultural transformation was the essential part, because if that would not have happened, the rest wouldn't have followed. But the idea behind the museum was that culture could serve as a transformation tool. So it could have this social effect of driving the urban renewal of an area which until then had been a marginal part in the city, an important role of being like a symbolic vector of conveying an outward image of the city which was in transformation. but also, of course, a very significant agent of economic development. You have to understand that Bilbao, the whole metropolitan area in Bilbao, it's about a million people. And every year since the opening and until COVID came, we have received at the museum over a million visitors, of which 80%, 85% come from outside the region. That means that the economic impact of that, it's significant. We estimate that the last pre-COVID year, that amounted to over 500 million euros of additional economic activity just because of the operation and the activity of the museum, of which almost 80 million were additional tax revenue, which the regional institutions collected due to that economic activity. So it is, in that sense, the project proved itself to be an investment, not just an expenditure. It was an investment to help in the transformation process, but an investment that generated income and economic activity when it started.
Mm-hmm. An investment, not just an expenditure. Great.
So, because I think many times in culture, we have that confusion in the discussion where many times culture, the numbers connected with culture are considered expenses, and sometimes they're really investments. They're not expenses.
Now, you were born in Bilbao. You have a degree in economics and business from the University of Deusto in Bilbao, as well as being the director general of the museum. You are therefore very well equipped to answer my following question, which is, how did this affect the people of Bilbao? We've talked a bit about infrastructure investments and the way that the museum has galvanized urban renewal. But what about, how did it affect the people of Bilbao and the local economy more specifically?
Well, I think the significance is big. I don't think it's an overstatement saying that there was a Bilbao before and after the museum. Not just because of the economic impact or the urban impact that the museum has had, but also because I think the museum and its operation has influenced the psychology of the city, of the citizens in the city. I think Bilbao was going through a very harsh time in its history. It was going, it's been a very wealthy city throughout the last two centuries. It was hub of the Industrial Revolution in Spain. It was one of the wealthiest cities and regions in the country. But during the 80s, especially the end of the 80s, beginning of the 90s, the city was undergoing a very thorough economic transformation. Many of its traditional industries, shipbuilding, steel making, were in decline. The industry itself was under a process of change, changing the way they made things. The unemployment was very high at that time. So the city was transforming. It needed to change. And change is always difficult. So the museum, I think, was a very good example for citizens that if you are brave and if you confront the future and the challenges of the future with ambition and with vision, change can be positive. And I think that's what the museum produced, that sense of confidence that the change that the city needed to confront was not just necessary, but it was also going to be very useful and very convenient. So I think the museum helped the citizens confront those changes and that process of change that was starting before the museum, but mostly has happened after the museum opened.
Mm-hmm. And what about the building itself? The building is, as I mentioned in my introduction, incredible, awe-inspiring building, work of architecture, and is the sort of the centerpiece, if you like, of Bilbao, especially if you come into the city along the bridge. Initially, it was criticized for being designed by an American, for not being Basque enough, or indeed for not being Spanish enough. How has the building itself, how has that changed in the minds of the people?
Well, I don't think the building itself was the most controversial part of the project. I think the criticism in the beginning was more about the nature of the project, whether this being a museum would be a museum with an international profile and not so much a local Basque or Spanish profile. The building, the building itself, I think was mostly, I think the reaction was mostly of puzzlement and really disbelief, because it was such an odd shape that nobody really thought it was, or many people thought it was not going to be possible to build. The fact that the building was happening in an area of, it was fairly central, but it was marginal. So the citizens, I think, looked at the building grow and with a skepticism initially, and I think with interest as the shapes took form. For us, the building was always a very important part of this equation. So we thought the building needed to be not just a great space to accommodate the program of the museum and art of the museum, but also we wanted the building to become the visual identity of the museum itself. So, and I think that's what it has become. I think because of the genius of the architect Frank Gehry, he understood the demands of the client of the program, but also he understood how what role the building was going to play in the city. So he understood that site very well. And that's why the building, although has nothing to do in its formal shapes with anything you find in its surroundings, it seems as if it's been there for a very, very long time. It seems as if it blends perfectly with the city, with the river, with the hills behind it. So for us, the building, it really has achieved the goal of becoming both the best space to show art, but also a great visual identity for us as a museum and as a city.
Mm-hmm. And the building, in many ways, has also become synonymous with this Bilbao effect, quote unquote, this idea that you can transform a post-industrial city or a disaffected town with a very aesthetically important culture. You know, suddenly you just got this sort of swanky building. You've got it in a post-industrial site and you can galvanize the economy in the way that you've described. And you can also increase the confidence of the local population. Do you think that, though, is easily replicated? Do you think that there were specific parts of Bilbao that made that possible? And do you think that, you know, it's become something of a cliche that elsewhere you can just sort of throw like a deconstructivist piece of architecture, you know, spend millions of pounds on a building in a disaffected area with high unemployment rates and hope that culture can sort of act as some kind of replacement? I guess my question is, do city planners walk a fine line between those two things, between trying to galvanize the local economy in a cultural way, and also, you know, by just sort of throwing some 21st century culture into a mix of a disaffected population?
Well, I think this is a very interesting question, because in my mind, one of the worst effects of this project has been that type of misunderstanding that, you know, any city with a problem can solve it by importing more or less a spectacular building, and that will do the trick, and it will be like the magic wand that transforms the city or transforms that region. I think that's a major misunderstanding. It's a major mistake. I think what I understand is the positive lesson that can be drawn from Bilbao is that that essential issue of whether culture can be a tool for transformation, social but also economic transformation, I think the museum has proved that to be a certain possibility. But in order to do it, I think you have really to understand what are the issues involved or the factors involved in this becoming a reality. To me, it is architecture, it's an important part of it, but it's not the only part. I think you need to have a very clearly defined model where architecture plays its role, but there needs to be a role that responds to the content, to the program that it's going to be displayed in that architecture. And as important as, let's say, continent and content, it's the operational model that runs that into a sustainable reality year after year. So you need to have that clearly in mind before you jump into commissioning an architect to do a building. You need to understand what is the building for, what is your collection, what is your program, what are your resources or your model to make that collection work in a sustainable way, way year to year. In the case of Bilbao, I think it was very important that the goals of the project were defined early on, and how those goals were connected with this broader strategy. I think that this project do not work in isolation. They need to be a consistent part of this broader city or regional strategy of transformation. In our case, I think it was very important that the museum was defined with the intent of having a global impact. So we were not just here to provide another cultural amenity for the community. That's also true, but that was not our main goal. Our main goal was to develop in Bilbao an institution that would be in Bilbao but speaking to the world. And for that, it was absolutely essential to be part of a network of institutions, in our case, of the Guggenheim family. And of course, in any project of this size, I think it's important that, and I think we have seen bad examples of this in the last years, and certainly in Spain, where the support necessary to develop the project, not only in its investment phase, but also in its operational phase, it's there. And in our case, it is public support, but it's also private support. So you need to develop this network or this model of operation that provides enough resources to allow you to work in the scale that is required to attract visitors from all over the world. I think those are issues which are essential, which are as essential as architecture, they are less visible, but I think they're not less important, and they should be taken into account if you want to replicate the effect. If you take that into account, I do think the effects are replicable for sure. And I think there are many other examples in the world where this might be happening.
And do you think that it's Bilbao's case, or a case of kind of extraordinary transformation, is helped therefore by the fact that it was sponsored by the Guggenheim Museum family? This wouldn't have been the sort of transformation that we're describing couldn't have been quite as possible if this were a local developer, or even indeed a Spanish developer, or even a smaller international developer. We've got the Guggenheim Museum who threw its weight behind this project.
In our case, I mean, it's certainly in the case of Bilbao, and you're looking at this specific case of the Guggenheim Museum Bilbao, the fact of the museum being part of this network, part of the Guggenheim family, let's say, of institutions, it's essential. It's been an essential because part of our model. We would not have been able to develop a world-class program if we would have started from scratch. We didn't have enough resources to do that. So to work in association, in partnership, to develop this, for us, as I mentioned earlier, it's essential. We are not located in London, we are not located in New York or in Paris, so we are basically speaking to the world from the periphery. And what allows us to do that is this connection with other institutions that work on our same wavelength in New York, in Venice, in the future, in Abu Dhabi. For us, that's an essential part of our model, but each case might be different, of course. I'm not saying that every city needs a Guggenheim Museum, because that would not be possible for sure.
Mm-hmm. And now 2020 was a difficult year for museums everywhere. How has the Guggenheim Bilbao kept its visitors engaged, both local and virtual, throughout this time? And how can you maintain, going into this next decade and encircled as we are by greater uncertainty, how can you keep this sustainable momentum up, do you think, for the city of Bilbao?
Well, certainly the last year and a half has been a difficult year for everybody and every institution, and certainly every cultural institution in the world, for us too. We have been lucky in a way, because we were able to keep the museum open for most of the time. We were closed for about 10 weeks last year, but we were open since early June, and we have been open since then. Of course, having to endure a situation with a much reduced number of visitors, which a much reduced revenue for the museum, so we had to do a special effort to maintain the program alive, which we did. We had to cancel or postpone some exhibitions, but we were able to keep the museum alive in its program throughout the year, obviously reinforcing our digital presence. I mean, the fact that we had already, as an institution, started our own in-depth digital transformation process 4 or 5 years ago, that has helped us being able to cope better with this situation. But we had to strengthen our digital initiatives, both in the from the operational side, but also from the education or from the perspective of the visitors, to keep this connection to visitors who were not able to come to the museum. And then, of course, we had to make sure that our operation for all visitors who were coming was done in safety, preserving social distancing, avoiding as much as possible physical interaction, so that at least those who were able to come to the museum could enjoy the space and could have an enjoyable experience. Going forward, well, yes, you mentioned it, we are in an age of uncertainty. We are confident that once the situation goes back to what more or less we thought was more normal, certainly where mobility is restored and tourism goes back to what we were used to, the museum will be able to keep its presence. I think if we continue with what has been our main paradigms during these years, which is basically having a main emphasis in the quality of our program, making sure that we have our operation in the museum is very much centered in the visitor and in improving the experience of the visitor, and making sure that our model, our operational model, keeps being sustainable. We enjoy a very diverse source of funding. About a third of our funding comes from public subsidies, but two-thirds come from our own operation and private contributions. And we aim to keep that model, because that's the model that, at least until now, has served us well in order to be able to generate enough resources to develop the program at the level of quality that our audience expects from us.
Juan Ignacio Vidarte, thank you very much.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you.
If you've enjoyed this episode, please don't forget to subscribe to FDI Podcast, which you can find wherever you get your podcasts. Next week, we'll be heading to southern France, where Swiss philanthropist and art collector Maya Hoffman has unveiled a new tower for her multi-million dollar arts complex. Hope you can join us then.
The latest episode of The Next 5 podcast is out now, and it's all about AI and creativity. I speak to Doug Eck, Senior Research Director at Google DeepMind.
Creativity is part and parcel of humanity.
YouTube creator Danny Vidari.
AI can give us humans new ideas.
And Neil Maiden, Professor of Digital Creativity at City University London.
AI creates a lot of opportunities. I think it's a great leveler.
Listen to the full episode of The Next Five wherever you get your podcasts. Enjoy.